This is Dojo Live, Tech Without Borders, stories that bring us together. Hello and welcome to Dojo Live this Tuesday, March 12th, 2024. My name is Kim Lantis and it's my pleasure to join my co-host today, America Guerrero.
Hey, Kim. Hello, guest Aidan.
Hello. And that is right. Today's guest is Aidan Bachrat, who is the CPTO of Watchful. Thank you for joining us today, Aidan.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, Kim, in America. And it's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, it's going to be a really fun conversation because you're here to share how we can discover what our competitors are up to, essentially, what they're doing to keep their users hooked. And of course, what does that mean for us as companies? We can gain a competitive advantage really by seeing how our competitors are growing, retaining, and engaging with their users. I'm super excited to dive into this topic of conversation today. But before we do, we would really like to know the Aidan story. What's kind of your history, your passion, and what's led up to being the CPTO of Watchful?
Wow. Okay. So I'll try to keep it short and interesting, but it all started when I studied physics, actually. And as a physics and as a physicist, it's like, you know, brought me to like a level of curiosity in which I took many computer science courses and started like, you know, programming. Couple of years of software development, couple of years of hardware development, and then I did the shift to product management.
Okay.
Like 15 years ago, I think, and the rest is history. I found
you went from the physics side to the psychology side.
More or less, yeah, it resembles a lot when you think about it. It's like it's just like being curious, not about nature, but about how people think and work, and specifically in product management. And that's, I think, my biggest passion is like solving real problems for real users, and that's what I'm trying to do in the past decade and a half.
Wow. And so solving real problems for real users is really a lot of what Watchful is doing, right? Focusing on the usability of software products. But what is, at the high level, the problem that you as a company are solving?
Yeah. So in general, again, if I take like, you know, the past decade, I've been in product leadership roles in Outbrain and in Google, and competitive intelligence was something really like essential. It's essential for every product manager and product leader. And the thing is that it's done very manually up until today, even in Google, which is the best school that I had for product management. And what Watchful does is that it takes like competitive intelligence and do it at scale in a very systematic, ongoing manner. Mm-hmm. And it helps to see, you know, the trends and directions that your competitors and your like industry takes. So in a nutshell, I think that's what we do.
That's like super interesting. So before we get into this idea of, actually, I do have this question. I want to talk about the why it's important before we get into the how, right, of how Watchful goes about doing this. And one of the things that first came to my mind as I was looking into your tooling and what it is that you're doing is groupthink. Because I think it's easy to think that with a tool like this, all we would be doing is mimicking one another and then inadvertently leave out innovation. So how do we utilize something like this, but avoid being a duplicate of our competitors and all essentially becoming one of the same things? Or that's kind of something that happens naturally anyway, I suppose. But let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think that I'll provide a bit of background about what we do and the kind of customers that we have. And I think that it'll be a good segue to answer your question. So I'm going to take 2 minutes to cover that.
Yes.
So in a nutshell, we help company grow and retain the users by understanding their competitive landscape better. And our kind of like ideal like customer, the ICP, is usually like big B2C companies, Fortune 100 companies that are our current customers. It's the biggest apps that all of us have in our mobile device. And your question is great because the goal here is not mimicking and not copying what others are doing, but gain confidence in your own roadmap and strategy and keep, like, you know, a pulse check and know what's going on and pivot if necessary. But again, if it's a decision support system for every product or strategy decision that a company takes. And we usually work with either product teams or like strategy teams, and in some cases more recently with marketing teams. So these are the three pillars that are relevant to our solution.
I think that makes a lot of sense because, I mean, even if you're, like we kind of talked to or alluded to earlier in the show, this idea of the psychology of things. So even if the products are different from one another, the way people work tends to be the same. Am I right in that regard?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. We see examples of insights that arise from knowing what your competitors are doing that are non-trivial. For example, an insight can be that your competitors are moving way faster than you. They're launching more experiments and more features in a much faster pace. And it's not necessarily on the feature base, but so that's one example. I have actually a cool example that I can share. I cannot disclose the name of our customers, but I can disclose some of the apps that we track. So I think that a cool example to showcase that is Bumble, the dating app. So about a year ago, we had a publication on TechCrunch that we've discovered, I think it was almost half a year before it went public, the feature of what's called Bumble Hives. Bumble Hives basically means more casual friendship and less around romantic dating. Which is, if you think about it, it's a huge pivot compared to the landscape. Oh, yeah. But it's very smart moves strategically. They're doing a smart utilizations of their matching algorithm and their chat capabilities and many other capabilities and profiling in order to solve for a different use case.
Yeah, but an absolutely maybe even a more widespread use case, right? If I move somewhere, I'm not necessarily wanting a romantic relationship, but I certainly want friendship, right?
Exactly. So that's exactly the direction that they took, and we've discovered. And again, I think that's where the beauty of Watchful comes into play, is that it's not around one feature. It's like the incremental steps that you see towards a specific direction. We call it focus area. Okay. So you started to see Bumble app investing a lot in their product development into these Hive module, which at some point in time, I think half a year ago, they even considered to make it a separate app. So it doesn't mean that their competition needs to copy that, but I think that it's really interesting move and really that's something that every CPO or strategy person of the competitors of Bumble should take into account and be aware of.
Go ahead. Curious about, as a user, how do you visualize those updates, that information? So for example, Bubble, that it has this new trend. How do you see that, like in a newspaper, while you're using Watchful or using images or what is that data that helps you to keep?
So now we're getting into the how, right? How does Watchful garner such insights and trends?
Yeah. So before diving into the how, I think it's important to cover what exactly competitive intelligence means, okay? Because we have three pillars, okay? With three dimensions, I call it. And we'd like to, and we're positioning it as 360 view on your competitors. So one pillar is the product intelligence, okay? It's the features and A-B tests and experiments, everything your competitors are doing. Second pillar, and that was a result of the fact that we had this data, is the marketing module, which is all the marketing campaigns and promotions that your competitors are doing. And third one is the performance, meaning latency and loading times of specific pages and actions in the in the app. And I think that when you combine all the three together, you get a very robust, holistic understanding of what your competitors are doing, what's their focus areas, what's their velocity, And even in marketing, like, you know, the share of voice is something that we see gaining like lots of interest. So in a nutshell, that's like what we do. And I think that your question was how we present the data, how we present the insights, right? So we present it mainly as like a news feed. Okay, so it's a news feed of insights. And again, I wish I could show you the platform, but we have there like, you know, the name of our customers. And we use, like, I think that our main tactic is comparison, okay? So we believe that it becomes very actionable when you compare yourself to the competition. So we actually track our customers' apps as well as their competitors' apps, okay? And then when you put it side by side, you see, I don't know, let's imagine an app which is not a customer, I don't know, like app X, okay? And then their competitors is app Y. Then I like when you actually see when we visualize these are the focus areas that you are doing, and that's what your competitors are doing, and that's the velocity that you're moving at, and that's the marketing campaigns, and that's the promotions. And now imagine that you expand it to more than one competitors, to 5, 10, 15 competitors, then you get a really good benchmarking on your own app and your own like quality of like development even. So that's, I hope it answers, but that's in a nutshell how we do it.
No, it does answer my question. And I think now that we have this data, I'm curious as to what the decision making then looks like by utilizing your tool. Because let's say, my competition is moving twice as fast. Is that a good thing? Do I need to push myself to keep up? Or is it better to let them, you know, run and get tired and learn from their insights, and then, you know, the tortoise and the hare kind of type fable? Or what do we do with these insights?
And also the possibility of acquiring the competition or something like that, I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it varies by like use cases. The main use case is like hyper competitive like verticals, and we usually would like we specialize in food delivery and dating. I gave this example in social apps, in retail. That's our key verticals, in travel as well. Mm-hmm. That's our key verticals. And again, all these verticals, if you think about it, is like very large B2C companies that's like competing a lot on the product side and on the marketing side. And I think that our unique angle is that we focus on mainly on engagement and retention, on like lifetime value, on like what are the levers that they have on like expanding the lifetime value of the users.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, here on Dojo Live, our focus is mainly as of late the travel and hospitality industry. I know that kind of recently you did release a global travel apps report that people can access that on your page as well. But could you speak a little bit to some of the high level findings of that? Like, what are you finding with these trends? Because I think that's something else that came up in the conversation, right? It's not just about individual companies, but what's happening in the big picture, sort of this crystal ball of sorts that we could, you know, work toward.
The travel industry report, I can speak in it like high level, and then I can provide actually a more concrete example on a different vertical. But in general, I think that it shows this specific report shows like the value of tracking many competitors, of having wide industry lens of like all the features of all the competitors, and even players that you haven't considered initially as competitors. And then you can see, for example, if we'll take like marketing, okay, you can see the utilizations of channels, okay, like push notifications versus emails versus in-app banners. How do I utilize the channel? How does it look in terms of like the user journey? Like 1 week after onboarding, again, app A versus app B and C and D, like how much push notifications, how aggressive they are in their marketing campaigns. So that's like one aspect. Second aspect is like, you know, how much time it takes, for example, to conclude an experiment. We see companies that move really fast and conclude experiments in like a few weeks' time, and some companies that keep experiments on for more than a year. So again, this benchmarking thing is very powerful, and we see it as very actionable too.
I'm curious, what are you finding to be most effective? The you know, the fast iterations or the marathon?
So actually I think that, you know, I have an example of a company that I find very impressive in terms of like their velocity. And it's an app that most of us like know and use. It's TikTok. So again, another discovery that I can share, because we published it on Wall Street Journal, I think around a half a year ago, and on TechCrunch as well, is that TikTok has started to work on what they call Teco. Teco is their chatbot, their AI chatbot. And if you think about it, it's a very strategic move to embed AI into TikTok, and it makes more than sense. And again, we discovered it before it was launched. And imagine if you're like a big social network that compete with TikTok on some aspect, how interesting this data is and how actionable and impactful it is. So Teco specifically is now mainly on like helping on search and discoveries. So you can ask the bot to show me cool videos, like funny videos of pets, and then they'll generate you know, a feed of videos. But down the road, there's endless endless things that you can do with it. And I'm sure that TikTok are like planning it. Stuff like, you know, curation content and video creation tools. So I think that's a good example of like golden nugget. We call it like, you know, it's one discovery, but it's so powerful that it can impact the entire like social space.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, the search experience. It's my understanding that there's sort of been this huge investment in that increased, you know, research and development in this, particularly because of post-COVID. I think just the amount of people who were kind of isolated and spending time alone and having, you know, to utilize internet and other sources for their search. But then we also have Gen AI that you kind of alluded to, this more conversational approach. What do you see the future of that? What's pushing that type of investment? And what are you seeing in those trends?
Yeah, it's interesting. So generative AI is obviously booming. I think, again, that like from what I see and from where I stand as like a product builder, I think that there will be the biggest platform. And currently there are a lot of platforms. But I think that we're going to see like few winners. Okay, we're going to see 2-3 winners probably. I don't know if it's going to be OpenAI or Google or Facebook or other players. But I think that, again, the magic will happen with product people that will identify concrete problems and will, like, you know, solve it for like the users. And I think that the holy grail with AI is finding use cases right now. Okay, it's finding like real use cases and solving them. Currently, it's really vast, and it's like but in some cases it's a bit like fluffy. It's not solving like, you know, concrete use cases. Again, OpenAI does it for some, like for some things, definitely for content creation and stuff like that, but I think that the future will be like AI engineers, people that will know to operate the machines and ask them question and tailor solution based on these machines. So
sure, it is an engineering, it is a talent. You know, I get stuck, first of all, like you mentioned, like with, I don't have the paid version, so every now and then I get my information is only updated through, what is it, 2021 or 2022 or something, and I'm like, damn it. And then of course you're like, how can I ask this question better, because I'm not getting the result that I want. And then for me, sometimes there comes this point where I'm like, screw it, I'm just going to do it on my own. But it is helpful.
Well, actually, I have a tip. I love Gemini.
I was going to say that, Kim, what are you doing?
old school for something that's been around for like less than a year, but I'm still old school.
I don't know if that's because I'm a past Googler or something, but I really love it. I prefer the UX. I prefer the results. So I use it all the time. I started to neglect OpenAI like ChatGPT.
All right. If you're listening, keep up. OpenAI, hire Watchful to help you with those industry insights and garner some competitive advantage.
No, but that's just me as a user.
Perfect. You know, I was also going to ask in terms of other nuggets, if you have examples of these ahas, these things that maybe have been brought to light with all of this data, all of this insight of where to sort of hyper-focus or sniper shoot rather than just, you know, blast the shotgun approach out there. Oh, is there anything else interesting that you can share in terms of industry or what's been found due to your approach of the competitive advantage?
Yeah, definitely. I have one last example, which is from a different category. It's like from e-commerce. And that's on Amazon. That's all of us.
I was
know.
Saying, who could it be?
I'm spending lots of money on this platform, but I think that this one actually was also published in TechCrunch, and that's a discovery by Watchful. And the thing is, like, I think it resonated a lot because it was really pure on user engagement and on expanding the share of wallet of the user. And that's a buy again feature. So it was like a dedicated tab with an icon that shows like buy again. And it was very prominent on the main screen of Amazon. I don't know eventually what they did with it because I don't see it anymore. So maybe it wasn't a successful experiment. I don't know. But the thing is that it should have take your previous items that you've purchased through Amazon and similar ones, and then you just encourage you to buy them again. So I think that that's something that was very powerful, and their competitor took it very seriously, this discovery. So I think that's another interesting example.
Mm-hmm. It is an interesting example. And then what you can do with it, right? Because this is a good idea. This is a cool feature. But it doesn't make much sense, right? If we're talking about, I don't know, bookshelves and coffee tables, because those are things that we tend to buy once and not utilize. So then it's like, how do we shift this? It should be things like scrub daddies and, I don't know, the things that wear out, right? But it's very smart.
Something.
Yeah. So yeah, I just have one remark on this. I think that what we see is that with time and with a couple of years of experience with our customers, we see that they do get a stronger signal once the experiment is abandoned or included. So that's a signal if it was successful or not, if it reached the KPIs. So there's one point in time when we discovered the experiment, and then there's the second point in time in which it's either abandoned or included, and then we can say if it's successful or not. So
it's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
Yes, I was going to share that something that I do manually is that when I want to learn about the travel and hospitality industry, I look at the Skipped website. And I also like to learn about the past, not just the present and the trends. Is that something that you can also do with Watchful to learn about, I don't know, maybe there were companies back then in 10 years that they did like a big mistake, but there was no information in internet because it wasn't like a thing or something like that. Is that something that you can also do with Watchful?
So I love the question because it's a very smart one, because again, we do see exactly that. We see that with time, once you track a competitor, you start to identify trends and you can extrapolate things and get really smart guesses on this like future direction, almost like a crystal ball. Okay, so I think that a good example to capture this is actually on the marketing module that I haven't mentioned a lot, but last Black Friday, for example, and Cyber Monday, we saw many customers looking at on like the previous years and learning exactly the marketing tactics, the moves, the promotions, like the specific categories, and then learning and building their like campaigns on top of that. So I think that that's one good example of like how historical data and seasonality comes into play in decision making.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it can also, that could apply to a lot of things like the COVID pandemic that we brought up, or I don't know, like global warming or this shift toward going green, you know, something that might not have been applicable 5, 7, 10 years ago, or even last year might be more applicable now. And so it's interesting to look backward as well as forward.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. This is really great. You know, I wanted to kind of bring this back in terms of you as an individual, Idan, and your time working with, you know, you've thrown out some big names out there, Google and many other companies, your time with Watchful. What would you say as an individual helps you kind of be this better person, this adaptable person, some of your learnings and your takeaways that you might counsel someone else to sort of follow in a journey, right? As we learn and grow as people, what might be some words of wisdom that you have?
Yeah. I love your questions, by the way. Really good. The first thing that comes to mind, I think in my personal experience, and it's not a cookbook for how to be, you know, a successful product leader or product executive, but what helped me a lot is actually seeing many different verticals and industries, like industries, and seeing companies in different sizes. So I think that the last shift that I did like a year and a half ago from Google, which is like a tech giant, into a relatively small startup, which is Watchful, helped me, like, you know, I call it to keep in shape, to go to the weeds again, to the grounds, and be in and like become a builder once again, because in large company it's really hard, like, you know, and especially if you're in a leadership position, you're not close enough to the building. And so that was one challenge that I really, and I think that, again, if I'm looking at, like, on career path, I think it's good to like zoom in to like small companies, zoom out to large companies. I really enjoy it to like experience both worlds, and there are advantages and like disadvantages to both. And second is like industries, because I do like see that, like, you know, experience that I gained in like ed tech in Outbrain helped me a lot in Waze and navigation app when we try to monetize it, for example. So I had lots of background and experience. So I think it's helpful to experience lots of things, and eventually the dots connect, as Steve Jobs said. So yeah.
I think that's extremely wise and very helpful. Any advice that you have in connecting those dots? How do you keep your eyes open when you go from one industry to another to realize which learnings are indeed applicable? What's your process for that?
Yeah, so for me, I try to, so like my North Star, my like lighthouse is always to focus on a problem that I'm passionate about. And again, the problem at Watchful is a problem that I've experienced as a user, and I was hearing about it and I was so excited. I wanted to like to buy it when I was in Google, but then I thought it's a better idea to build it, to be on the building side. So I think it's yeah, if you can remind me the question, because
no, that's great. I was asking about your individual tactics, I guess, to being able to draw, to link things together when you make these adjustments, and to drawing on your past experience.
Perfect. So yeah, so it's mainly, I think it's mainly focusing on a problem that's interesting enough to solve, and in an industry that's interesting for you. And I think that's like playing with your passion. Like if it's more like, you know, managerial and corporative, so do that. And if it's more like a startup, then do that. And I think that it's reversible. I think that's also something that if I would teach like a junior product manager, that every decision is reversible in that sense. So yeah.
That is absolutely amazing. And that's a really good outlook, I think, on life, not just professionally, but personally, this idea that very few things are actually permanent, right? And if anything, that's probably what Watchful is showing on the competitor side as well, the ebb and the flow, and to learn how to be okay with that, and just to see what can I do with this information in a much faster, more effective way than I would have otherwise.
Yeah, you summarized it perfectly.
Thank you.
You're really good with that.
I have about, I don't know, 8 years of practice, I suppose. So this is great. You know, Ilan, it has been wonderful sharing this time with you, learning your insights, learning how Watchful can help us gain more insights. If someone wants to get a hold of you or check out Watchful, how might they go about doing that?
LinkedIn is the best way to approach
me.
All right.
All right. That sounds great. There it is. LinkedIn, Ilan Bakrat. Thank you so much. Stick around as we go off air. But we do not have another Dojo Live show up this week. So this was the one and only, and what a great show it was for this week. But do check us out next week. Is it next week? The 20th. On the 20th, we're going to be talking with Waka Now. That is an OTA based out of Africa, with Adenike McCauley, who is their CEO. So be sure to catch that, as always, at 10 o'clock a.m. Pacific, right here on Dojo Live. Until then, have a great rest of your day and the rest of your week, everyone. Ilan, thank you.
Check out past episodes, transcripts, blogs, and more on our website, dojo.nearsoft.com.